We're speaking today about the life and work of the great Polish Marxist Isaac Deutscher on the centenary of his birth. Deutscher was the author of two monumental biographies of Stalin and Trotsky and was a pivotal and influential socialist writer and critic. And I'm joined by Mike Davis by phone from San Diego to talk about Deutscher. He is a radical scholar, journalist, political activist, urban theorist. He teaches history at UC Irvine and is the author of, among other books, Late Victorian Holocausts. Just before the break, we had been talking about Deutscher's relationship to the movements, the people he was writing about. But I want to just back up briefly and pick up the thread of Deutscher's chronology. He fled Poland in 1939 on the heels of the German invasion, I think just before the German invasion of Poland.
About 6 months before his, and of course his entire family was consumed in the Holocaust in Poland.
So tell us about Deutscher's life in Britain. Actually, he had to make ends meet, I think had quite a difficult time breaking into academia. And my father, who taught for many years at the University of Sussex, told me that Isaac Deutscher was to be offered a chair in political science at the university, but it was spiked by the liberal political philosopher Isaiah Berlin, who Deutscher had reviewed unfavorably.
Indeed, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, Deutscher was essentially blacklisted during the 50s when he was working on the Trotsky trilogy, and this in post very great hardships on the family. Tamara Deutscher, his wife, not only a superlative journalist, but you know, principal collaborator on this project. But Deutscher came in 39. He actually he'd been in the Polish army in the late 20s, doing very dangerous work, doing communist agitation inside of the Polish army. Came to England, and he joined up with the Polish army, which was based in Scotland, but was almost immediately figured out to be a dangerous subversive. So he was put on a labor detail or something like that. When he came to England, he had mastered Russian and French, didn't know a word of English. By 1942, he'd become a regular contributor to, of all things, The Economist. And between 42 and I forget when the Cold War finally ended, his relationship with The Economist, maybe 1949, he wrote something like well over 600 articles for The Economist, contributed regularly to The Observer, and became one of the most well-known political journalists and experts, not just on the Soviet Union, but particularly during the war on European life under the Nazi occupation. And he returned to political journalism whenever he needed to earn an income, but academia remained a will-o'-wisp because of the, essentially the blacklist. Even though people, even Cold Warriors like George Kennan, virtually the father of the Cold War, pronounced his biographies to, he called Isaac Deutscher a great biographer, a great writer. But it didn't mean that Isaac Deutscher could put bread on the table or get an academic job anyway.
Well, speaking of his writing, his journalistic work, as Tariq Ali mentioned in the clip, Deutscher in adulthood became a master of English prose and could be likened to fellow Pole Joseph Conrad. What can you say about Deutscher's prose style and his use of language?
Well, his prose style was very absolutely classical. And like Conrad and others who came as adults, to English, they began English not by simply reading, the newspaper or comic books. They began with the classics, and they began with Shakespeare. They began with Trevelyan and the other great biographers, political biographers, of the 19th century. So there's a very classical quality to his writing, and it's infused, of course, by a sense of just the moral magnitude of the dimensions of the events he's writing about, by this these kind of Shakespearean qualities. And this is not just something he imitated, it's something that he apparently thought about very deeply. He read dozens and dozens of books on the philosophy of history and on, you know, tragedy as a you know, genre, you know, searching for the right forms in which to portray these momentous struggles inside the Soviet Union and inside the workers' movement in the 1920s and 30s.
And he was also a great essayist, aside from his monumental biographies and works, and wrote on a wide range of subjects, from George Orwell's 1984 to Freud to being a non-Jewish Jew. Do you have any impressions about him as an essayist, or any of the essays that you think were particularly important?
Well, first of all, remember, he started off as a kind of avant-garde poet. He had a very strong aesthetic sensibility, you know, attuned to modernism, and he unfailingly, you know, kept up to date with this, and it, you know, and informed his work. I suppose of his books of essays, my favorites are Heretics and Renegades, which was a response to The God That Failed and the Confessions of famous ex-communists, where he stakes out the position, you know, of a heretic, of someone who's defending Marxism against its usurpers and, you know, and betrayers. And he was absolutely scrupulous, perhaps far more scrupulous than some of the German Frankfurt School exiles, than ever do anything that could be interpreted as becoming a renegade, the particularly arduous process of applying for a visa to the U.S. to go to the Trotsky archives at Harvard. And he refused to engage in any of the semantic games, you know, the State Department expected him to deny his communist path. His anthology, The Non-Jewish Jew, is a wonderful book, and it recalls not simply the world and contributions of Jewish intellectuals, but it reminds us how absolutely important central Jewish secularism, Jewish radical culture, was in the constitution of modern European culture. And of course, it's written with a great sense of nostalgia, because the whole world he wrote about, the world of his, you know, student days in Krakow, the world of underground agitation amongst the Jewish working class in Warsaw, this is the world, you know, completely gone, disappeared, you know, as you pointed out, within months of his fortunate immigration to London.
Well, as you have mentioned earlier, Deutscher was one of the foremost left critics of the Cold War and had unusual insight into the Soviet motives and the politics of the larger Soviet bloc. I'd like to play a clip of Deutscher talking about the Cold War, and I wonder if you could set the stage for that clip, as it took place at the first anti-war teach-in at UC Berkeley in 1965, which you attended.
Well, I was an itinerant rabble-rouser, not a student, but just an SES kid at the time. Considered myself to be a radical populist. Had never heard or really met a communist before. The teaching was quite extraordinary. Deutscher spoke after midnight. He was preceded by Paul Krasner, the realist, and Norman Mailer, who gave these incredible stream of consciousness, quite brilliant, but insane rants. And then suddenly, sometime after midnight, this figure appears with a goatee. And I was so naive at the time, I turned to a friend of mine. I said, "Trotsky's dead, isn't he?" I mean, he's really dead. That's not Trotsky, is it? Deutscher was almost like an apparition. His speech was short, but it's something I've never forgotten. And I think anybody who was there that night, you know, kind of remembers the drama and the magic of that talk.
And now we're going to go to Isaac Deutscher speaking about Soviet foreign policy in the period following Stalin's accord with Churchill and Roosevelt at the end of World War II, in front of an audience of students and others at UC Berkeley.
Stalin, who was in his dealings with his own people absolutely unscrupulous and ruthless, Stalin, who was most ruthless and most cruel in dealing with communists, the same Stalin was in a bizarre or Byzantine way, scrupulous and legalistically scrupulous in his bargains with his bourgeois allies. He claimed the advantage that they had yielded to him, Eastern Europe. He stuck to the letter of his wartime agreements with Churchill and Roosevelt, but he also respected his obligations. He yielded Western Europe. He had resigned from Western Europe. He had committed himself to secure the predominance of the bourgeois order in post-war Western Europe, and he carried out his obligations. Long before the Truman Doctrine was proclaimed, Stalin had very effectively saved Western Europe for capitalism, saved Western Europe from communism. Now, this is no paradox. If you study the post-war history of Europe, you will see that in the post-war conservative clericalist governments, the communists said, as junior partners, they disarmed their own communist resistors who had met in France. They urged the workers to behave moderately, not to demand high wages, to help capitalism in reconstruction. There would have been no restoration of capitalism in Western Europe without Stalin. And we were told that this was communism, that Russia was plotting subversion. If the Russian government, if Stalin's government was plotting anything, it was plotting the restoration of capitalism in Western Europe. In Greece, where according to the gentlemen's agreement, Britain was given a 90% predominance when the Greek communists struggled and were crushed by British tanks, Stalin did not utter even a murmur of protest. The Soviet press didn't for weeks write a word at that time about the civil war in Greece. And this, we were told, was communist subversion. In Yugoslavia, we now know that the communists there under Tito's leadership carried out a revolution against Stalin's obstruction. Stalin did all that he could to prevent them. We know that Mao Zedong in China ordered the last campaigns that were to end in the triumph of Chinese communism and of Chinese communist partisans. Against Stalin's advice, against Stalin's obstruction, to the end, Stalin urged Mao Zedong to yield to Chiang Kai-shek and to allow his partisans who had fought for 15 years in the hills and from the caves to allow his partisans to be incorporated in Chiang Kai-shek's armies. Happily, Mao Zedong was no Togliatti and no Torres, and went on fighting for the triumph of the Chinese Revolution. I'm saying this being no adherent and no admirer of Mao Zedong's various other policies.
And that was Isaac Deutscher speaking at the first anti-war teach-in at Berkeley on May 21st, 1965, recorded by KPFA. And there, Mike Davis, he makes one of the central arguments that he reiterated throughout his career about the nature of Stalinism.
Well, he also ended that talk by saying, he said, we must restore meaning to the great ideas, the ideas of liberalism, democracy, and communism. Yes, communism. I was stunned, and I think most of the audience was. It was like a seance with dead revolutionaries and betrayed revolutions, with, you know, all the hopes and dreams of the, you know, the early 20th century, except, you know, there he was standing before us. And the tragedy, of course, he died. He was in 1967. He was barely 60 years old. And in the midst of what he considered to be his greatest work, the biography of Lenin, and for Brezhnev buried the hopes of socialist reform in Eastern Europe with his invasion of Prague in 1968, which events that Deutscher would have been, of course, one of the keenest and most important critics and analysts of. But if you don't mind, I should point out that the Deutscher's project was actually continued to live through his wife, Tamara Deutscher, and her work.
Right, who was a friend of yours.
She was a friend of all of us at the New Left Review and very, very much our hero. And when I arrived in London in 1980, she was collaborating with Edward Hallett Carr, E.H. Carr, and Robert Davies on their extraordinary many, many volume history of Soviet Russia. So the Deutscher project, of which she was the collaborator in some sense, probably should have had her name listed as co-author, had a very strong alliance with the Carr and Davis project, which went on through the 80s. Carr died in 82, but Davis continued it. And, of course, in London, Deutscher's spirit and work is very much alive. The Isaac Deutscher Prize, so many people who worked with him and knew him, who continue to honor his memory and learn from his work. Where in the United States, unfortunately, he's a more forgotten figure, I think.
We're speaking about Isaac Deutscher, and my guest is Mike Davis, socialist writer, author of Magical Urbanism, co-editor of Evil Paradises, Dream Worlds of Neoliberalism. Well, you just mentioned Prague Spring, that is the attempt to create socialism with a human face that was crushed by the Soviet Union in 1968 after Deutscher died. Do you think that, it seems that in hindsight he was overly optimistic about the loosening of control in the Brezhnev era and the potential for real reform. How do you think he would have viewed Prague Spring?
He would have viewed it with, I think, the uttermost ferocity, because I think Deutscher, more than almost anyone, would understand that what was at stake in Prague Spring was not only the legitimacy of socialism in Czechoslovakia and Eastern Europe, but the larger struggle for the restoration of socialist democracy and revolutionary tradition in the Soviet Union. In his last year, in late 1966, beginning of 1967, there was already greater pessimism coming into Deutscher's work. It's a lot of the reform spirit of the early 60s of the Khrushchev period had been buried. And I don't think in retrospect it would be easy enough to say that he was completely wrong with his belief that there could be a restoration of democracy in the Soviet Union. But the thing about Deutscher that was so outstanding and built on Trotsky's analysis was his detailed current attention to social forces, particularly to the working class and youth and students in the Soviet Union. And he gave a huge importance to the enlargement and the kind of modernization of those social forces and the belief that their voices would be heard. And, of course, from our perspective now, we can see how absolutely catastrophic Brezhnevism and the events of 1968 in Czechoslovakia have been for the future of the left.
Well, we don't have much time left, but I wanted to ask you what you would say to those who might say that after the Cold War and the disintegration of the Soviet Union, that Deutscher is no longer relevant, that he spoke to an era that is now behind us.
On the contrary, Deutscher's work is the key to understanding what happened, the key to understanding 1989 and the recovery of the traditions that he represented and continued and was the the Tribune of, I think, are essential to our future. I mean, socialism and the left may seem dead as a doornail to some people, but consider what the alternatives were. Unfortunately, we inherited the world that Trotsky predicted in the late 30s, where the real alternatives were choice between democratic, some form of socialist democracy on one hand, and a civilization of barbarism. Of course, in the last instance, it's not merely a matter of reading Deutsche or Trotsky or Rosa Luxemburg. It's a question of making those, you know, ideals come to life in practice and in action.
Well, we do have a minute or two left, so I want to ask you a bit more about Tamara Deutscher, who really was Isaac Deutscher's close collaborator, a scholar in her own right. Tell us about her contribution, because the Isaac Deutscher, rather the Deutscher Memorial Prize, which you mentioned, is named after both of them.
Her work is inseparable from from his. I mean, the writing may be his, but the research is in every sense equally. Her research that she continued in association with Karen Davis through the 1980s. But she was an extraordinary person. She was, she could be caustic and funny and ironic, and she's a person of just enormous wit. And most of all, I remember when she came back from visiting Poland, which she'd left 30 years before. No, more than that, 40 years before. She was covering Solidarność, and she visited Krakow, and she visited where Isaac had lived as a teenager, and I asked her about it, and she said, you know, it's quite incredible. She says, every synagogue and Jewish building has been restored, but the people are all gone. She says, the spirit is gone. You know, it's nothing but a country of ghosts. It was almost heartbreaking. But she kept her pen sharp till the very end of her life, writing under her own name more frequently than, you know, she had in the 60s and 50s. So she needs recognition as the full collaborator in Deutscher's biographies.
And she died, I believe, in 1980.
In 1990, I think.
Oh, 1990. Yeah. I've been speaking with Mike Davis about the life and legacy of the Polish Marxist historian, journalist, essayist Isaac Deutscher, who died in Rome 40 years ago at the age of 60. Mike Davis has written many books, including Late Victorian Holocausts and the recent In Praise of Barbarians, Essays Against Empire, published by Haymarket Books. I want to thank you so much, Mike, for being on the program today.
And I want to thank KPFA for being the best thing on the air.
Well, thank you. I also want to thank the Pacifica Radio Archives for providing me with the audio of Deutscher, which was recorded by KPFA. And I'd like to encourage people to check out the website for the wonderful Deutscher Memorial Prize, which is given each year for a book which exemplifies the best and most innovative new writing in or about the Marxist tradition. You can find a link to that site and other resources on againstthegrain.org.